Welcome to the Campfire Committee, Outside and Fireside, a podcast to explore and discover the joy of camping and being in the great outdoors.
I'm Allison Logan.
And I'm Steph Pavan. We're your hosts.
This season, we're stepping up our camping game and going beyond the basics. Whether you're an expert camper or you're new to all of this, we're creating a camping community to share the many lessons and stories, tips and tricks, and all the fun that comes with getting outside and fireside.
We're bringing you into the world of camping and inviting you to join the Campfire Committee community. Remember to download, subscribe, and follow us on social at the Campfire Committee so you don't miss an episode or any new fun bits.
This podcast is about camping, and though we camp primarily in Ontario, we would like to recognize the Indigenous past, present, and future with a land acknowledgement for Toronto, where we live and make this podcast.
We recognize that we are on the traditional territory of many nations, including the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Anishinaabeg, the Chippewa, the Haudenosaunee, and the Wendat peoples, and this city is now home to many diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people.
We also acknowledge that Toronto is covered by Treaty 13, signed by the Mississaugas of the Credit, and the Williams Treaty, signed with multiple Mississaugas and Chippewa bands.
We always aim to grow our understanding of and respect for the diverse First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people in Toronto, Ontario, and Canada. And we seek to forge better relationships and celebrate this land with those whom have historically called this place their home as we visit these places to camp. And we encourage our listeners to do the same.
Now, let's light this campfire.
Some of the best spots to experience the outdoors can be remote, distant, and or difficult to get to. That can be one of the main reasons for their appeal.
Living in a country as large as Canada, in a province as large as Ontario, where most of the population resides in a very small geographical area in the southern strip of the province, many people will end up traveling quite a distance to get out to a lot of the provincial or national parks.
The same goes for the states, or any other place where you can drive longer distances relatively easily from location to location. Any car ride can be a road trip, but the kind we're talking about have different stops for camping.
Of course.
More than one campground or park in a single outing.
We define a camping road trip as either one extremely long drive to a destination with at least one stop. But really, most people probably think of a road trip as a journey with several stops. Whether at hotels, motels, or campgrounds, you'll likely need to stop overnight and stop a few times throughout each driving stretch, at minimum for gas or to charge up your electric car, and for bathroom breaks. When you're planning a camping road trip, there are a lot of different things to consider or challenges you might encounter.
First step in planning a road trip starts like any other trip. Where are you going to go? When are you going to go there? And how long are you going to stay? You're going to need to pick your route, final destination, or turnaround point. Just like with a one-stop camping trip, you've got to consider how far you'll travel and how long you'll be gone for.
Difference with a road trip is the journey is much more a part of the fun rather than something to complete as quickly as possible. Once you know your endpoint or turnaround, you can plan your route to and from said location. This could be a linear route to and fro along the same major travel ways, or a bit more of a circular route where you do some different ones as well. Or it could be a bit of both, depending on where you're going and where you want to stop along the way.
This past summer, I did a big road trip. And since it had been on my bucket list, I knew where the final destination or farthest point I'd be going to was. And that was the legendary Sleeping Giant Provincial Park. A grand total of 1,413 kilometers from home in Toronto and a minimum 15-hour drive with no stops and no traffic.
Whew.
If you're not familiar with the route, go check it out. That's a lot of ground to cover and something I split into five legs. Two overnight stops on the way out to the Giant and two overnight stops on the way back. From there, I looked at several options of where to go, parks to see, and drive distances between them. There are so many provincial parks between Toronto and Thunder Bay.
Yeah.
let alone private campgrounds, cities, towns, natural features. It was really overwhelming at first.
I bet.
But after settling on the parks we'd stay at, we had our game plan.
When you're doing a camping road trip, you have to account for how long it will take you to pack up and get on the road, as well as unpack and set up when you arrive at your next stop.
If you've got a hard-sided trailer, you may be able to be hitched and ready to roll when you get up. If you're in a tent, this can be quite the process.
Mm-hmm.
At minimum, it's probably about half an hour on each end. But realistically, it's easily an hour or more. Throw some kids or pets in there, and you're probably adding on more time than that.
We'll get more into this when we talk about packing, but it's an important thing to consider in the planning stages. An 8-hour drive on GPS will take at least 8.5 if you stop for gas twice with a bathroom break.
Add that hour on each end and you're already talking a 10.5-hour day.
Without stopping to eat, enjoy the scenery, and even just enjoy the road.
Whew. Moral of the story. Try to break down the journey into manageable sections.
Then you have to secure your bookings. For more information on that, check out our season 1 episode all about picking a campsite for car camping. Make sure that you do select alternate campsites, campgrounds, or even different parks, as you may have to be flexible on the fly when you're reserving them on the website.
Once you've got the sites and have the final locations set in stone, you may realize just how many hours you will be spending in the car.
Oof. Which leads us to the next thing you want to consider and plan into your journey. And these are the pit stops. Not overnights, but places to stop for a meal, to get out of your vehicle, swap drivers. You get the idea.
Yeah, I really want to stress that you cannot underestimate the power of the pit stop.
What was that?
You mean the power of the pit stop?
Yes, when you say the power of the pit stop. What? Why? Okay, fine, Steph. I get it. You just take this. That's what's happening here.
Thank you. Like any good detour, this one will be well worth it.
Okay.
What I mean by not underestimating the power of the pit stop is not to forget how much interest these little add-ons can provide. How stops made with the sole purpose of getting out of the car to see something you're not likely to see again soon, if ever, planned or unplanned, can turn out to be some of the highlights of your trip.
Not to mention, you'll stretch your legs a lot more if you've got some waterfall to go see or a lookout to climb to.
Exactly.
Okay.
So on my giant road trip, I'd been super excited about seeing Aguasaban Falls and Gorge, but hadn't really considered that many other interesting stops.
Mm-hmm.
While we were cruising along between the first and second campgrounds, our first really long driving stretch, we knew we needed to stop somewhere for lunch. When we were both getting a little hangry, we said we should keep an eye open for a good place to park and grab our cooler out of the back. Second laters were zipping over a bridge past a huge waterfall and also past a very clearly marked picnic area. So we pulled over, turned around as fast as we could, and pulled in for a picnic lunch at a table and a little exploration of Chippewa Falls.
Ooh, a picnic table in a picnic area with waterfalls. That is a fancy pit stop.
It sure is. And there were bathrooms too.
Mm?
And if we waited and only hit the falls I'd planned on, though still spectacular, we would have missed Chippewa.
Mm-hmm.
And when we did stop at the gorge, it was in torrential rain.
Oh.
So not quite the same leisurely, beautiful lunch we'd had at our first spontaneous pit stop.
All the power of spontaneity. Though many pit stops on a road trip are required for a specific reason, like to fill the gas tank or for those bathroom breaks, the power of the pit stop. Yes!
Yes!
Is so much higher if your stops are coupled with some special natural feature or some famous local ice cream or just, you know, popular spot.
Now you've got it.
I see. I think an easy and popular power of the pit stop example could be something like the Big Apple on the 401 or Weber's on Highway 11. You could easily go and stop for food, but somewhere like a Weber's with its popularity and reputation, you know, the burgers, the milkshakes, the experience of the train cars, makes it more than the drive-through experience while you're on the road.
I mean, the lineups themselves are a sight to see.
Definitely a very popular spot for people to take a break along their way up north or back down to the city.
On the flip side of places like Weber's, some of the places you could pass could be local, provincial, or national treasures. They could be natural or man-made. Even world wonders, real gems, must-sees. So stop and see them.
Absolutely.
Oh. Make that detour and drive by. You likely won't hit everyone, but I'd be willing to bet the ones that you will hit will be memorable for one reason or another.
Definitely. Now, that said, you may need to plan for some of your standard or no-choice stops as well. When you're driving to some remote locations, gas stations and grocery stores.
And places like hospitals or mechanics.
Mm-hmm, or other things you may need along the way, it could be very few and far between. So factor these things in. Note a few of these key places down. Don't just rely on your Maps app to do it.
Once you've got a route all figured out, some pit stops planned, some just-in-cases, all mapped out, you've got to plan what you need to bring. Some things you'll have to consider that you don't when car camping at one stop are needing to be able to partially unpack the vehicle at one-night park stays, needing every single square inch of space in your vehicle. So things like the extra utensils or really big pot you barely use, they should stay behind. You also may need to do groceries and laundry, just to name a few.
When you're packing for a road trip, it's got many of the same requirements as any other camping trip, just with some definite modifications.
You've still got the space in your vehicle to consider, but since you'll be spending so much time in the vehicle, as well as loading and unloading the vehicle to varying degrees at different points in the trip, what you load and how you load it will be done differently than in a one-time jam and slam the doors and make your way to your final destination.
Completely agree.
You often need to access things in the vehicle while on the road. For example, lunch stops required me to get to a cooler.
Which would typically probably be pretty deep into the vehicle or accessible from the trunk.
Yep. But in my car, if it's in either of these locations, I would have to get the paddleboard off the roof to do it.
Yeah, not gonna do that on the road.
Yeah, that's a no-go. Solution for me was a smaller, soft-sided cooler that was accessible from the rear door. Paddleboard didn't have to go anywhere to get in there.
Smart. Yeah, not a huge problem on a trip from point A to B. But then when there's A, B, C, D, E, and F involved, you're likely going to need to access some of the things without unpacking your entire vehicle.
Exactly.
Same goes for quick overnights. You may eat all of your meals out of that small cooler or grab a bite on the road and only need your tent and sleep system and clothes and toiletries. Whatever it may be, you're not going to be unpacking and setting up everything in your car at every stop. So you'll want to think about where you're packing those need to reach at every stop items.
Funny little story. Did a one-nighter to break up a 12-hour leg of driving and did not need to fully set up camp to get comfy and organized the way I typically like to. I pulled off the paddleboard, set up the tent as quickly as I could, and got on the water to enjoy the remaining hours of daylight. I got lucky and saw a bald eagle.
Ooh.
No pictures, just memories. And spent a little too long on the water. I had figured I'd be safe without a tarp or dining shelter, so I went ahead without it. You can see where this is going. It was getting dark by the time I was eating, but I enjoyed the campfire and cleaned up. I had heard some distant rumblings, but wasn't concerned until a few large drops of rain fell and the skies just opened up. I threw what needed to be dry into the car, locked up, and got into the tent faster than I have ever done. And I promised myself to trust my tarping instincts the next time, which I did on the next leg. I debated taking down the dining tent early, but did not, because I trusted my gut. And I ended up avoiding getting myself and all of my gear completely soaked while trying to pack up for the next leg of the journey.
Oh, jeez. So you did say that little story, and what exactly was the point again?
Oh, yeah, when you're making a quick overnight, be prepared for the weather or risk a narrow escape. Or much less narrow than I did. Though I got caught with a lot of those items out from dinner, I was able to get everything away and didn't have to spend a long time in the tent with a dog in the rain. It was the end of the night, so I just threw on a podcast and went to bed. Yes, the tent was wet in the morning, but everything else was dry when I got up. No wet tarp, no wet dining shelter. And since it was only a one-night stay, I knew I'd be packing up wet, but would be able to dry out at the next stop.
Nice.
Yeah, that reminds me. We were going to get back to packing up and setting up, as it's something you'll do more than once on a camping road trip.
Sure is. Camping across Canada, we had this down to a science. We went from Toronto to Vancouver Island and back in the summer of 2000, when I was much younger than I am now. My mom drove with us three kids, towing a tent trailer, to Calgary, where my dad met us and joined for the Alberta and BC legs of the trip. Anyways, the four of us, my mom and my brothers, had the setting up and taking down of the tent trailer perfected. I don't know if we ever officially timed it, but it was truly a well under 10-minute affair from start to end. Once you understand the essentials and start to get into the groove while you're on your road trip, it's easy as pie to get things set up and taken down. In this corner, we have one of the bravest women we know, who has traveled with three children. I was 13, Dan was 9, and Mike, the baby, was 6. She camped her way from Toronto to Vancouver Island and back again, and called it a walk in the park. She's also camped from Toronto to Prince Edward Island, husband and the two boys along for the ride. Basically, she's crossed Canada with a tent trailer in tow.
It's Camper Sue!
There, it's Camper Sue again. Did you say road trip? I love a road trip. I'm always up for an adventure, and a road trip always brings some type of adventure. On that same road trip Allison had previously mentioned, there were frustrations waking up on day 2 in Sault Ste. Marie at the Comfort Inn on July 1st and realizing that the electric cooler killed the truck battery. Rookie error. And that some jerk had completely blocked me in the parking lot. This meant a phone call back home to Victor in tears, only to have him truly encourage me that this was just a small setback and I was more than capable of making this journey. So I called CAA for a boost, and the CAA guy helped me maneuver my way out of the parking lot. There was no looking back after that. At any rate, my suggestions for road trips are 1. Minimize your gear. Really just take enough dishes and cutlery for the people that you have. Don't take extras. They can be rinsed in the morning or washed, whatever you happen to have time for that day. In our case, clothing was packed in Rubbermaid bins and kept in the truck, so we only took out what was needed on a daily basis. Sleeping bags and pillows were stowed in the pop-up, so it was easy to pull them up to make the beds at night. Hotel stays were great after really long driving days. Pizza by the pool for the kids with a glass of wine for mom, and we were all happy campers. When traveling like this with kids, you need to plan stops to give them a break along the way. Take lots of things to keep them entertained while driving. In our case, Game Boys were new, and Santa had brought them for the previous Christmas for Dan and Mike. Allison was more of a book reader than a Game Boy player, but she probably had a few tries at it anyway. Try discussing your route with your kids. Involve them in the planning where appropriate. We sat in a parking lot in Portage la Prairie and discussed going all the way to Regina, even though we were supposed to have a short day. Everyone agreed to this plan because of that same hotel night. Dan became my navigator this trip. Remember, this was way before GPS. A hint of his future career choice. Mostly on a road trip, remember to relax and enjoy the journey. You are making lifelong memories for you and for your family.
Okay, so she may not have called it a walk in the park, but she often made it look that way to us kids.
What great memories. Welcome back. Whether you're solo road tripping or traveling with a full vehicle with a trailer in tow, what you need to bring is only what is needed for your party. So let's get to gear. Unless you've got that trailer in tow with the space for everything and the kitchen sink, you're going to need to prioritize.
You'll likely need more clothing and food, even with stops and laundry, more on that in a second. So you want the must-haves, less of the nice-to-haves, and none of the items that you could definitely do without.
For me, on the advice of what you and Camper Sue told me, that meant a very reduced kitchen bin. What's usually an extras bin at home was swapped with the big kitchen bin, and I only brought the essentials in a smaller bin.
Reducing your gear can go so far as to be able to sleep in your vehicle. Camper Sue did a lot of solo travels to hit her 60 and 60 milestone and had the ability to set up a bed inside her SUV without a lot of effort. Mini bins took the place of the usual big Rubbermaids with just the critical equipment items.
For example, the matches, rope, first aid kit, limited cooking gear.
Only the needed clothing, not all of the extras you might bring for a week-long trip spent in one spot. Our episode in season one, all about packing, will give you a better idea of what some of these critical items might be.
Reducing and optimizing the things you pack also means planning the menu in a way that doesn't require any specialized, large equipment. When I went, I did a lot of reheat meals that I may or may not have added fresh stuff to as well. Basically, I left the barbecue and large cookware behind. Grilled foods were for pit stops and another time.
Speaking of food, you've got to consider long-term food storage, restocking, and planning for minimal waste. It's one thing to bring leftovers home from a weekend away, but when you're packing up and heading to another site, you can't just be lugging leftovers all over the place.
Oh yeah. During the first leg of my road trip, I cooked one double meal with the express intent of it being able to be thrown in a wrap for a quick, hearty, and interesting lunch on the road. It was actually the meal I had at that Chippewa Falls pit stop.
Well, and knowing you, I bet it was a tasty one.
Sure was. So back to the food storage. Those leftovers went into that small, soft-sided cooler, which was where all the food for the first leg of the trip had been stored. What this meant is that my other cooler was packed full of our food for time beyond the first 4 days. I didn't even have to open the cooler until the last morning of the first leg on the way out. That cooler was packed with several pre-cooked meals that were frozen solid, as well as meat and dairy products that were still frozen solid 4 days later.
That's the benefit of not opening a cooler and packing it properly, too.
No kidding. I was so impressed. This two-cooler method has totally changed the way I camp on longer trips.
And then there's your trusty pantry bin. On a road trip, you can rely more heavily on the items like rice, pasta, or canned soup. No longer, just in case, these things can be stored until the tail end of your trip.
Read, fewer groceries required when you do have to restock.
And back to those reheated meals. They make cooking very easy. You can add on, but you don't have to.
Those types of meals are essential for the reduction of the kitchen gear. Getting rest or taking breaks when you're on a road trip is extremely important. We talked at length about this safety measure and many others related to driving in Season 1, Episode 7, Car Camping. Check that out for more.
It's so important not to forget road safety and camping safety on long trips. You'll be spending more time traveling and camping, so the potential risk is increased. In there, we also mentioned knowing where the nearest hospital is.
We even mentioned it again today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not gonna lie here, guys.
Yes, Stephanie.
I didn't heed my own advice last summer. I didn't cross all my T's in this department. I had the car safety covered. I knew where major grocery stores were. I had all the basic first aid supplies with me, but I had not checked where all the hospitals were en route.
Whoops.
Yeah, another little unplanned pit stop or adventure on the giant road trip was a trip to the hospital for a broken arm.
Oh, no.
We were on the way back from Sleeping Giant, having just driven through some terrible weather and settling in at Lake Superior Provincial Park, the North Campground, Rabbit Blanket Lake. I knew we'd have quite the evening ahead, what with drying out all our gear and desperately needing to do laundry, so we unloaded the car and decided to divide and conquer, as they say. While my partner was doing laundry and showering, I was with the dog, hanging gear and laundry to dry. Setting up what little I could, I got to the lighting pretty quickly. I stood on a camp chair. I looped a lantern cord in the shelter. Got down. When I stood on the camp chair to loop the cord around the opposite sheltered pole, the chair ripped. I fell, I got tangled in the lantern cord, the dog's leash, and the broken chair, and proceeded to fall very awkwardly on my wrist.
Did you actually hear it snap?
I didn't. That was for dramatic effect.
Okay, ew.
But I did immediately think it was broken. And by the time someone found me, I was pretty panicked and I needed medical attention.
Yeah.
But we had no clue where the nearest hospital was. And in complete shock, I feared the worst, that it was hours away. Mm. We were extremely lucky when we learned from the park office that the nearest hospital was about 25 minutes away.
That must have been a huge relief. Given the time of night, the hours you had already spent driving that day, you may not have been able to make another trip that was much further than that.
Definitely not.
I remember when you messaged me, and I was just in shock that one of the something bad things that we always talk about being prepared for when we're camping actually happened to you. Also, I just wanted to make sure that you were okay and feeling in good spirits after that. But tell the listeners what you learned, Steph, besides, of course, not to stand on a camp chair, especially one that is already tearing and ripping.
I get it. I made a stupid decision, so that's a loaded question, because I learned a lot. Besides that not stepping on a chair thing, you've got to be flexible. Even a fully planned, packed with activity schedule can be completely scrapped if doctor's orders are no hiking and no swimming and definitely no paddleboarding.
Oh, that must have been a bit soul-crushing.
It felt worse than the broken wrist. Ugh.
Okay, but now, months later, what did you learn?
I won't lie, being flexible was not the first thing on my mind when I broke my arm, but the moment a change was suggested, cutting that leg a day short and getting a hotel for a night, I knew that's what we had to do.
Yeah.
And changing on the fly is not something that I'm always so keen on doing. The disappointment of missing out on all the activities that I had come to do, paired with being one hand down and finding most simple camping activities difficult and or painful, the hotel, the change in plans, was exactly what I needed to enjoy the rest of the trip.
Well, and then you came out to meet our large group of extended campfire committee members at one of our favorite parks for our annual big camping trip. So that had to be the cherry on top.
It was, and what a way to end a big trip like that.
So, when you think about the biggest takeaways from last year's road trip, what are they?
Definitely to plan an indoor bedroom / electrical / plumbing luxury for yourself midway through your trip,
mm-hmm.
or multiple times if your trip is that long. The private shower and toilet alone is wonderful, and the bed, it's like sleeping on a cloud compared to even the best air mattress or cot combos. But it's not just for the luxury, it's practical. Though laundry facilities are available at most Ontario parks, this could have been a great place to do that, even at a laundromat in town, and also hang laundry indoors. Plus, it is really nice not to cook or clean for even one meal.
Completely agree with planning a hotel or motel stop partway through. There is nothing better than a hot shower and a warm bed after a number of days on the road and or in a tent. Also, to be flexible. Sometimes you need to change your plans partway through. Take a longer drive to avoid one night camping in a thunderstorm, or taking a bit longer along the way to detour to a weird or interesting sight that you want to see that you didn't even know about before you were on your way.
And though it's a road trip, you don't want to spend all your time in the car and on the road.
I remember on that cross-country Canada trip, making a change along the way that helped us avoid camping in the rain, but also gave us more time and opportunity to explore somewhere the next day that we wouldn't have otherwise.
Tell me more.
We were in Manitoba, and I remember we were supposed to drive and camp for one night along the way just outside of Brandon, but the weather was calling for bad rain, and that was not something we felt up for at that point. Sitting in the Walmart parking lot outside of Winnipeg, my mom and 13-year-old me conspired to convince my younger brothers to gear up for a longer day's drive through to Regina, Saskatchewan, with the promise of a hotel with a swimming pool and a water slide. They were totally on board with that deal.
Oh, fair enough. I would have been too.
And that decision was great, especially as we drove through that thunderstorm that we would have been setting up in. Plus, it allowed us to explore Regina and check out the RCMP Museum, which was really cool to us kids. Something we all remember from that trip, and it wouldn't have even happened if we weren't flexible and open to detouring our original plans.
I know about that too. Road trips may have some extra work involved and extra flexibility required, but they are so much fun, especially because you get to discover things you never would have if you were just traveling directly to one location for a longer period of time.
So, let's recap some of the key things to keep in mind for a camping road trip. Plan your route and the time at your stops accordingly. And unless you're living the van or nomad life where you are truly able to stop and stay anywhere as long as you please, don't expect to be able to do everything you want to do.
At the shorter stops, you might not get the full experience. But, like I did, you can always mark the primo sites that you would stay at if you visit these places again.
Bring what you need, not lots of extras. Plan to restock on food and to do some laundry.
Enjoy the journey. Never forget the power of the pit stop.
With the ever-increasing cost of travel, road trips are one of the best ways to get out and see places you wouldn't otherwise see, to experience things you wouldn't otherwise experience, and to explore places that are more local to you and don't require air travel.
So many people want to visit other continents, this coast or that coast, but when there are so many places to visit nearby, or at least within driving distance, why not hit the road and obviously go camping while you're at it?
We want to inspire you to camp and take your camping up a notch with a road trip. Pick a few destinations, a route, and get out there, either for the first time or again.
No two trips are ever alike. Just get out there and build some great memories and stories further away from home.
That's a wrap on another episode. Thanks for listening.
Don't forget to like and subscribe to the Campfire Committee, Outside and Fireside, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Remember to share this episode with others to help us expand the Campfire Committee community and pass on the love of camping and the great outdoors.
For more, check out our website, thecampfirecommittee.com, and find us on social media at The Campfire Committee.
And join our Facebook group, a place where you can share your favorite memories, places, and ideas when it comes to all things camping. Also, let us know what camping or outdoors topics you want to hear more about in future episodes, your camping stories, and any other feedback you've got.
Join us next time, Outside and Fireside.
And until then, this campfire has ended.
Before we go, we'd like to thank Sue Logan, better known around here as Camper Sue, for her endless camping knowledge, support, and experience.
And Stephen Pavan, our all-in-one editing team. We couldn't do this without either of you.
And to all the extended members of the Campfire Committee, thank you.
All sound effects that are not our own are from thedevo.net.
Music from Epidemic Sound. For more details on all episodes, see our show notes.